The Voice of Reason Broadcast Network is proud to present The Orthodox Medievalist. Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson is a former professor of history, a professional writer, and a priest of the Russian Orthodox Church. His web journal can be found at russjournal.com. That's russjournal.com. And now here's your host, Matt Johnson.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to another edition of The Orthodox Medievalist. The last time we ended up not covering everything that I really wanted to get to, but now that President Obama's trip to Russia is over, I think I need to discuss it because it is that trip and the speeches that were made on both sides say quite a bit about how things are changing. I'm not necessarily saying that this is something that Obama has chosen. I don't believe he has much of a choice. But at least in terms of Russian affairs, Obama is infinitely superior and more intelligent than McCain could have ever been. Obama went to Russia explicitly attempting to avert World War III over the Iranian situation. And while McCain, of course, not so much during the campaign, but prior to the campaign, was talking about the ways in which he was going to start World War III, at least partially over the Iranian issue and also the Belarusian and Venezuelan issue as well. So I have to say right up front that I'm extremely pleased as to what happened concerning Obama's trip to Russia. If the speeches that he made the final speech he made at the New Economic School in Moscow, if that is any indication of Obama's policy towards Russia and the developing world, then I'm extremely happy with what I hear, especially with respect of McCain's candidacy. The central issue really concerned Iran, although Iran didn't come up in and of itself very much. It was very clear that Obama went over there with the understanding that the U.S. is really not in any position to engage in any military action as far as Iran is concerned. And therefore, what Obama is interested in is going to Russia with the understanding that America is willing to give in on a lot of major issues in exchange for Russia to put pressure on the Iranians in terms of their nuclear weapons program. Now, the problem is, of course, as always, that it's okay for Israel to have nuclear weapons. It's not okay for the Iranians or anyone else to have nuclear weapons. I don't know if any of you heard Netanyahu's speech. I think it was last month or the month before, his speech on foreign policy, Israel and the Palestinian state. Netanyahu is an extraordinary, unbelievable liar and fraud, as is typical of the Likudites in Israel. He basically makes the claim that we want peace, we want a Palestinian state, but we want these things strictly and solely on Israel's terms. We're going to have a Palestinian state so long as it doesn't have an army, so long as it doesn't have any independent foreign relations, and that the only embassies it's allowed to open are those that are mediated by the Israelis. They are to have no independent foreign policy whatsoever, no independent economic policy whatsoever, and then maybe, if that's all the case, then Israel will consent to a Palestinian so-called state. Adding insult to injury here, Netanyahu also made the claim that all of the refugees, millions of refugees that Israel has created since 1948, should be dealt with by agencies outside Israel. I really want you guys to read this outrageous document from this scumbag. And it really shows you what the Republicans and at least the mainline Protestants and Roman Catholics who support this guy, what these people really are. And what they, and you know, what whores they really are. And it really, it makes the Orthodox world look a lot better because as you know, the Orthodox world is by far the harshest. And the Russians and Ukrainian governments far the harshest on Israel. So Netanyahu says, we want other people to deal with the refugee problem that we have created. But you know, he says something else in that speech. And this is all gonna tie together with Obama's trip to Russia. He says that, you know, we really can't take in any of these refugees, partially because we don't want to pay for them. We want other people to pay. Let the Americans pay for it. They'll pay for any damn thing. But we also want, the problem is that if we let these people in, it will compromise, the integrity of our state, because Israel is a state for Jews. And if we let all of these Arabs in, it will compromise the integrity of a Jewish state. Now, here you have a statement. Again, I mean, it's nothing new. But you have the statement here that racially based states and ethnically based states and religiously based states are okay in Israel, but they're not okay anywhere else. I know it's kind of old news. You know, the Jews have always been like this. You know, the Jews can be nationalists. They can be ethnocentric. No one else in the world can be. It's an outrageous double standard. It's been talked about quite often. It's very typical. Here again, here you have in an official speech. Now, Netanyahu's speech last month may have been in May. Here, you know, this is a major document. This is a major foreign policy speech here. Mapping out what his and the Likud party's foreign policy is going to be. And here you have an explicit concept of the racially and ethnically based state. And this is the real reason, according to Netanyahu, that we can't take in these refugees that we, in fact, have created over the last 5 decades. Because it would harm our integrity as a Jewish state, and as a, you know, that wouldn't necessarily be so bad if it was equally mainstream for me to come around and say, that Russia and Ukraine and Serbia should be officially, Orthodox states, dedicated to the ethnic, and racial heritage of the Slavic people. That's perfectly legitimate relative to Netanyahu's own comments. But there's no doubt that we would hear all kinds of pious denunciations from, the EU and Obama, and no doubt from Israel itself. And that's really the outrage here. But the reason I want to bring up Netanyahu's speech, not only because it was outrageous and completely immoral, and it really shows you what kind of a man he is in the nature of the Zionist entity, but also because of the nature of, really, just this year, I would say, maybe a little bit last year, of Russia's aggressiveness now in battling the New World Order and Zionism, and how really, how substantial. Now, Russia has emerged. I've been saying this for years. People have only started believing me over the last couple of years, and I think I've been influential in this regard, that the Russians have positioned themselves without doubt anymore. And this trip by Obama to Russia, the first week in July, proves it to no uncertain terms anymore, that Russia is the leader of the forces against the New World Order. After this Obama visit, and what the Russians have forced out of Obama in this regard, and what they forced out of him relative to Israel, if that doesn't convince you that Russia is the head of the forces against Zionism and against the New World Order, then nothing will. And I'm sorry, it's just prejudice from this point on if you guys can't see this. And that's what I want to talk about here, exactly the nature of the concessions that the Americans were forced to make and the things that Obama was forced to do. It really wasn't... here are a couple of things. And, you know, Obama, I'm not opposed to the guy, really. I mean, particularly compared to McCain. And on foreign policy, Obama is infinitely preferable to John McCain in these things. But the problem is that Obama is relatively inexperienced in these things. I don't think he knows all that much about the Russian situation. However, I do think that he is not listening. And this is speculation here on my part. But Obama was a creature of the Council on Foreign Relations. And you guys might remember in 2005, the Council on Foreign Relations had financed a trip of Obama to Eastern Europe. Now, it seems to me that the CFR had already decided on who their next president is going to be. There would be no other reason to send a relatively minor American political figure to make major and important policy speeches in Ukraine and Russia and elsewhere in Europe in 2005. So there's a sense there that the CFR, the super elite, really second-tier elite. Actually, the Bilderbergs and other groups like that are above the CFR in terms of their elite status. But, I mean, we're talking about major elite figures, especially the Rockefellers, based in New York City, and the Rothschilds are deeply involved in this. That's no big secret. I mean, at least the Council on Foreign Relations publishes its membership list, and of course the Bilderbergs do not. We have to thank Jim Tucker at the American Free Press for finding this and publishing this membership list year after year. It's really become his specialty, and I think we should publicly thank him for that. And it's, by the way, Jim Tucker's opinion that the Council on Foreign Relations is inferior to the Bilderbergs. The Bilderbergs are, in fact, the bosses of the CFR people, to the extent that they don't overlap. In some cases, their membership does overlap year to year, but as a matter of course, it is the super elite who sit among the Bilderbergs, and their understudies at the Council on Foreign Relations. But the point is that the CFR had sent Obama to Ukraine in 2005, and Obama's speech, written by the Council on Foreign Relations, was very harsh. It condemned Putin, of course. The CFR and Bilderbergs have declared war on Putin and Medvedev, and that needs to be taken seriously. He had condemned Russian nationalism, and yet now, 2009, Obama is going over there with a very different attitude. And I'm telling you something, Medvedev is just as good as Putin is. I'm just as much a fan of Medvedev as I am of Putin, and I'm going to tell you why here in a minute. If you go to Medvedev's website, Kremlin.ru, you can, as well as his campaign website, which I think is Medvedev2008.ru, you could read a lot of his speeches in English, and you'll see what an aggressive nationalist he is, especially when it comes to the Zionist issue. I want to say here, I want to do two things now. I want to talk about Obama's speech on July 7th, and then Medvedev's speech the day before that, July 6th. Before I do that, I want to say a couple of things. Obama, with really not much experience in these issues, is really going into a hornet's nest in Russia in 2009. Here's what Medvedev has done in terms of foreign affairs just prior to Obama's visit, and really I think is what ultimately occasioned the nature of Obama's visit. First of all, this might not sound a lot to you, but for someone like me who specializes in the area, it's very impressive. Medvedev has openly made peace with Azerbaijan. That's a big deal, and I'll tell you why it's a big deal. Azerbaijan is a nominally Islamic society that has leaned very heavily to Israel over the last several years. The reason for that is that the basic vertical axis, so to speak, of Russian power has been Russia itself, Moscow, Yerevan, or the capital of Armenia, and Tehran, the capital of Iran. That really is what frightens the New World Order. That particular threesome, and we could include, to some extent, China and Belarus as well, and maybe India within that basic anti-New World Order movement. But the vertical axis that the elites really worried about was this bridge, Armenia serving as a pro-Russian bridge between Russia and Iran. And there, by the way, a substantial Armenian community in Iran, and I might say their religious life has been protected by the Iranian government, and the Armenians in Iran have done very well. And it may well, and I don't want to speculate too much here, but the Armenian community in Iran may very well have greased the skids as far as the Iranian government is concerned to make its peace with Russia and really stop worrying about the Chechenian issue. That Tehran has much more to gain by backing Moscow than it does these very eccentric, really nominal Muslims in Chechnya, frankly, who caused a lot of problems for the Iranians as much as they did for Russia. So I think the Armenian community, a very wealthy community in Iran, with full freedom of religion and very supportive of the Iranian government, I think had a lot to do with creating this axis. So once this axis had been created under Putin's leadership, the Mossad rushed to attempt to take control of Armenia's greatest enemy in the area, and of course that's Azerbaijan. They succeeded in splitting Azerbaijan from Iran, largely because, I mean, you know, the Iranians really didn't like the fact that, you know, in 1990, 1991, the Azerbaijanis had burned down the fences between the two countries, because the Iranians saw the Azerbaijanis as sort of, kind of, when I feel like it, Muslims. Yeah, they drink and they kind of do their own thing, and they're Muslims really in name only. So the Iranians weren't all that happy in seeing Azerbaijanis rushing into Iran when the communists fell in the early 1990s. If anything, it was the Saudis who had come both to Chechnya and Iran, to some extent in Bosnia in the 1990s, Albania as well, hoping to bring these people who were Muslim in name only into the Sunni camp. So in and of itself, right there, that irritated the Iranians, and the mission failed. The Wahhabis from Saudi Arabia really got kicked out by the Azeris, by the Albanians, and the only reason they were really welcomed in Bosnia for any length of time was that they came with a lot of money, and they were financing the anti-Serbian movement in Bosnia. And here you had an example, by the way, of Mossad Saudi cooperation, because Mossad, Saudi Arabia and CIA all work together to ship arms to the Bosnian Muslims in their war against the Serbs of so-called Republika Srpska, the small state in Bosnia that has a nominal independence within the Bosnian space. So this is I know this is very common for those of you who aren't really into this stuff. All of this has to be understood relative to really seeing the purpose behind Obama's visit. Making peace, Medvedev making peace with Azerbaijan is huge. It's huge because Mossad, which, by the way, opened up a Shabbat house in Azerbaijan for, like, you know, the six Jews who live in Azerbaijan, it generally suggesting that the Shabbatniks work with Mossad in that part of the world. That Medvedev really pulled off quite a coup here, in bringing Azerbaijan slowly but surely back into the Russian orbit. And I do think, that, like, you know, in certain parts of Turkey, when Azerbaijan leaned towards Tel Aviv, a lot of the population was very uncomfortable with that. The concern really is drugs. You know, Azerbaijan is a major drug, a drug transit region from Central Asia. There are Israeli nationals who are deep into the drug trade. The CIA is deep into the drug trade coming in from Afghanistan. and so is Mossad. So Georgia and Azerbaijan, for a whole bunch of reasons, became very important to the New World Order, who, as you all know, are deep into the drug trade. And that's no big secret. And millions have been made already in northern Afghanistan. But this whole question very much concerns Georgia and Azerbaijan, because these are major transit points for oil, natural gas, as well as drugs coming from Central Asia. So although these countries are small, that means nothing in terms of strategic significance. These are extremely important in world politics, and these states are extremely important relative to the battle against the New World Order. So it appears that Medvedev has succeeded where a lot of people didn't think he would succeed, in bringing Azerbaijan slowly but surely back into the nationalist camp. And that's a huge deal in and of itself. That's number one. Number two, Medvedev has openly called for the creation of a Palestinian state with its capital in East Jerusalem under Russian military protection. It's that proclamation that caused Netanyahu to make his speech concerning his version of a Palestinian state, which essentially is an extension of Israel. In his speech to the Arab League, Medvedev came out very publicly for a Palestinian state based in East Jerusalem under Russian protection. That's probably the best deal that the Arab League has ever heard. Let's face it, the Arab League, they've done a lot of good, but they've been particularly miserable in terms of dealing with the Palestinians. They have failed in every respect to assist them in any meaningful way. The Russians have really been the only ones to come to the Arab League and just lay out a plan for an independent Palestine that will be a part, in essence, of this battle against the New World Order. Now, if Medvedev gets his way and he helps create a Palestinian state based around East Jerusalem under Russian diplomatic and military protection, that will create a ring of power concerning Russia, Azerbaijan, Armenia, Iran, and then in the Middle East, Syria, and an independent Palestine. In Europe, I might add, that would also include Greece, Greek-speaking Cyprus, and depending on whatever the heck happens in Serbia, that might include the Serbs as well. That's an impressive record. So that's the second major issue. The third major issue is Medvedev's continuing to arm the Iranians. There is a major high-tech shipment of Russian armaments heading towards Iran. It's a very large order. There's a lot of scientific know-how that has gone into a lot of this stuff, and it actually has a lot of naval technology as well as the surveillance technology, satellite technology. It's due to be shipped. I've heard it's due to be shipped at the end of the year, and I have sources all over the Russian Federation, and they tell me that. The opinion of the Russian General Staff is that the Israelis are thinking of striking Iran just prior to that shipment getting to the country. And really now Russia holds all the cards relative to Iran. So those are the three big issues. That's why Obama went to Russia. Obama went to Russia as the weaker partner in U.S.-Russian relations. He made that very clear. And when we come back, I want to talk about his speech and Medvedev's speech as well, because there are some really substantial, I'll say, earth-shattering revelations in these speeches that are completely redefining the nature of nationalism and world order, and they deserve our very close attention. So when we come back, we will talk about that.
Don't go away, because there's more on the Orthodox Medievalist. You're listening to the Voice of Reason Broadcast Network. Visit us at reasonradionetwork.com. Let's return to the Orthodox Medievalist, brought to you by the Voice of Reason Broadcast Network, reasonradionetwork.com. And now here's your host, Matt Johnson.
Okay, folks, welcome back. We are dedicating this show. I was going to talk about something else when I was thinking about this last week, but now that I have read all of the speeches made by Obama and President Medvedev in Obama's speech last week, Obama's visit, excuse me, last week to Russia, there's so much here. It's a brief program. I can't do any of it justice, but I want to give you guys a basic outline of what went down there. And at least in terms of foreign policy, my estimation of Barack Obama is going up. He is approaching this very differently than the Republicans. The Republicans are already calling for his head relative to this Russia trip. The American oil firms are screaming that this man is giving away the farm. But Obama is approaching Russia very intelligently, and he's approaching it as a realist. And I wanted to say before that it doesn't seem like Obama is listening to his advisors. He's not listening to the CFR in this regard. He is not listening to Hillary Clinton, who's just, you know, kind of an ignorant power monger anyway. Not listening to Brzezinski or any of these other people who he surrounded himself with. He's kind of going off on his own here, and he's going off on his own because he finds himself in a very bad position internationally. You know, Time magazine just reported that Putin and Medvedev, by extension, still maintain a popularity rating of 80%. You know, here's a man who has maintained his popularity whether or not he's president of the Russian Federation. They love this team of Putin Medvedev because Medvedev is president, Putin as prime minister. Because of the increase of the standard of living. And the first thing, on July 7th, Obama makes a speech at the, and ironic, by the way, because he makes a speech at the new economic, school in Moscow. The new economic school, not talked about very much, was built by the U.S. government. It was built by the U.S. government and the Rockefeller Foundation. It was built, I think, in 1991. And the new economic school is really become the symbol of oligarchic capitalist power in Russia and Ukraine. And as a result, it's a hated institution. For Obama to go there and make his main foreign policy speech at that school, which largely, you know, praises, you know, the victory that Russia has made, in international affairs, really is ironic and highly symbolic. Obama basically went to Russia to say that the idea of America dominating everything is over. That's not going to happen anymore. Now, I think that Obama's being sincere. Whether or not the people that had him elected president agree with this is a completely different matter. Oh, and by the way, I should also say that it's really four things that Medvedev has done prior to Obama coming to Russia. I mentioned the Arab League speech. I mentioned peace with Azerbaijan. I mentioned the arming of Iran. I should also mention the fact that Medvedev came out in another major speech and said that the American dollar needs to be replaced by an international currency. Now, the nature of this currency has not been specified, But, and you know, my basic idea is that currency should be national and regional under the control of the states and governments involved, and cut the bankers out completely. I think Medvedev's idea is that the currency should be valued relative to the countries involved in using it, and that should be weighed with respect to their position as borrowers at the IMF. So their portion of, not as borrowers, as donors to the IMF. So the portion at which a country gives to the IMF, that should be their share in adding value or maintaining value to this new international currency. Regardless of the difficulties of, you know, he didn't really spell it out in detail, but the real issue here is that he wants the American banking establishment and the Federal Reserve cut out of global politics, which essentially would be the result of removing the dollar as the main currency of international transactions. I'm iffy about the nature of an international currency, but there's no doubt that Medvedev said this relative to weakening the U.S. In terms of world politics and weakening America's liberal international agenda. And we have to understand this. Russia, Belarus, Iran, these people are coming out with a nationalist and religious agenda for world politics, a multipolar world, a religious world, a national and ethnic world. It's the U.S. who is now the left wing, who is coming out in favor of secularism and internationalism and globalism. So we have to remember, this battle is not just a battle of self-interest, it's a battle of ideology. And the nature of what the world order is going to be, whether it's going to be the new world order of the bankers or the world order that's being promoted by this Russian-Iranian nexus, that of national states and regions and a global diversity of cultures and traditions, which is what I certainly hold to. That's the nature of the battle here. So Putin makes his speech at the New Economic School on July 7th. Let me make a few points here. First thing he says of significance is that he praises Putin. He says, listen, I gotta give credit where credit is due. Putin has made substantial strides in increasing the standard of living of the Russian person. That's a radical statement. It was just a few months ago where the American political establishment, left wing, right wing, I don't care what ridiculous label they give to themselves, was condemning Putin with every kind of insult in their ignorance they possibly could. Now you have a new president going to Russia and saying that Putin is responsible for the growth and economic power of Russia. Two times in Obama's speech does he say that the world order that I am advocating is based on sovereignty. The sovereignty of the state, the sovereignty, more importantly, of the nation. He says this twice. I mean, he agrees that human rights have to be maintained, and that could be okay depending on how you define these things, but he went out of his way twice to talk about the nature of sovereignty, the basis of all of these. Then he says that the era of empire is over. There is no way that one country is morally or legally permitted to dominate another. Now, is that tantamount to condemning the New World Order? I don't know. I'm not willing to go that far. But we gotta read behind the actual words that these guys speak, which are always very diplomatic and very pleasant, and see what the real meaning is. Obama is aware that, you know, relations between Russia and the U.S. are basically at Cold War levels. Putin and Medvedev have supported the Hamas government in Palestine, the Hamas elections. They have armed Syria and Iran. The Russians are against the New World Order. I mean, there's no way out of this. But, you know, the U.S. is in a depression. The U.S. took a shellacking in Afghanistan and Iran. Very little had been accomplished in these countries except to drive them into poverty. You know, the U.S. is broke. The U.S. owes the world in one form or another, private, public debt, $45 trillion. The U.S. is in no position to go around making demands on people. So he goes to Russia saying, the idea that the U.S. wants to dominate governments, that era is over. He may be flipping the bird to the neocons here. I don't know. If he is, I'm telling you, I'm liking this guy more and more. Obama comes out and says, we will reconsider, which I think is diplomatic talk for, we're going to reject the idea of this European missile shield that got the Russian general staff so upset last year and the year before. George Bush had made the claim that this missile shield is really about protecting America from Iran, but that was silly. Everyone knew, and the Russian government knew, that it was a way to attempt to contain Russian power. Now, there have been a few people out there saying that Obama has made a secret deal with Medvedev, saying, you stop arming Iran, we'll cancel the missile shields in Europe. In and of itself, that's a victory for Russia. I don't think that's the case. And let me tell you why. Russia is so heavily invested in Iran. Russian and Belarusian oil firms, oil refining capacity, military personnel in terms of advisors, technical assistance, you know, Air Force, Navy, submarines, etc. They're all over the country. Private and public investment has skyrocketed between Russia and Iran. Russia is deeply involved in Iranian politics, and that's not up to Medvedev to say that we can't do that anymore. The southern Iranian oil fields are now almost completely under Russian control. So Medvedev is in no position to make that kind of a deal with Obama. My personal opinion, and this is speculation now, is that there was a deal, that Obama went over there aware of America's weakness internationally, and said basically something along the lines of, you try to get the Iranians to behave, and we won't say anything about your speech advocating a Palestinian state at East Jerusalem armed by the Russians. In other words, we won't come out and vehemently denounce that, as George Bush and definitely John McCain would have done, if you, at the very least, keep Iran from developing nuclear weapons. You got to remember, it was just a couple of years ago, I talked about this a lot, and no one paid any attention, which is always the case, but I was proven right. Putin said, Putin goes to the Israelis, and he goes to the Americans, well, one and the same, and he says, look, stop complaining. We know that Israel has nuclear weapons. They have no right to condemn others for getting nuclear weapons. The racist concept behind that is outrageous. But I'll tell you what, if you're concerned about Iran getting nuclear weapons, we will build Iran's nuclear power plants in Russia and send them to Iran under Russian supervision. And the Israelis basically said that's not good enough. So the Israelis are clearly aiming for a fight here. But you know, Putin's idea was eminently sensible in that just let us control Iran's nuclear program, and then we've had nuclear weapons for many, many years, and we've had no problem. So this can just this could be essentially be an extension of the Russian nuclear program. So that was Putin's idea. It might be the case that Obama likes to reopen that. That, you know, we might not say anything about this Palestinian state, make sure that the Russians control Iranian nuclear ambitions. Basically, the concept is that, you know, Putin and Medvedev are very confident people right now. The victory in Georgia last summer over the Israeli-led Georgian army, that gave the Russian military and the Russian diplomatic corps a tremendous amount of confidence in themselves. And Medvedev is being very aggressive here. So Obama also says that there will be no additional American bases in Central Asia. Military bases. That's another big deal, because that had been a major bone of contention between Moscow and Washington over the U.S. bases in Kosovo, in Kyrgyzstan, in Kazakhstan, in Uzbekistan. These are highly strategic areas for the oil industry. And Obama is saying, no, we don't have the money to do this anymore, but we don't have the will to do this anymore. And I tell you, near the end of the speech, he says the U.S. can't impose its will on the world. And this is a direct quote. He says, America now understands that. In other words, going head-to-head with Russia was a huge error. Russia emerged because of that, as the leader of the forces against the New World Order. The U.S., the huge financial losses that America incurred in Afghanistan and Iraq, now the threats being made by the Israelis against Iran, the U.S. simply can't afford politically or financially to get involved here anymore. Basically, Obama went over there and said, you guys won. What do we have to do to start from zero to make this work? So, on the other hand, in the few minutes we have left here, Medvedev made his own speeches. On July 2nd, I believe that was before Obama got there, Medvedev went out to Eastern Russia, to Asian Russia. He made a speech to the oil, extracting oil and natural gas community. And he said, it's time for us to begin engaging in substantial overhaul of our oil and gas industry. We need substantial diversification. We need greater technology. We need streamlining efforts. We need to plow oil profits into the domestic sector, into improving the standard of life and the standard of living of the Russian people. You know, so he says something else. He said this actually during the campaign. He said it January 31st, 2008. He made a speech to the oil industry and he said two things, that need to be, that really need to be taken seriously. He says that our oil industry, whether it be state or private, needs to work together to create long-term planning. In other words, we're going to use this oil power to become the leader of the fight against the New World Order, and that our oil industry will, in this process, will receive state backing. So it's not just a matter of oil firms competing with each other; it's that the Russian state will back all the activities of the oil and gas sector, not just in Russia, but around the world. So, in other words, you know, between the lines, Medvedev says, if you continue, and he's talking to the Rothschilds, who control British Petroleum and much of the oil interests in Northern Europe and in Great Britain, he says, if you continue to mess with our oil firms, this is not just an economic issue, this is a political issue. You are, in fact, messing with the Russian state. And to the Arab League, he says that America needs to keep out. America needs to keep out of the Middle East. And he's basically advocating now, and this is irrelevant, I should say, and all connects with his work with Obama and his speech to the oil industry in 2008. He says he is going to increase Russian investments in the Arab world in terms of oil. As of right now, the yearly turnover in trade is about $10 billion. Medvedev wants to radically increase that. So now Medvedev is talking about an alliance between Russia and the Arab world. And, you know, this is the context in which Obama went to Russia. And this is also the context of Netanyahu's June 14th speech at Bar-Ilan University, just outside of Tel Aviv. So the fact is, and I'm going to conclude here by saying that the world has changed radically. I think that Obama's approach here has been extremely intelligent, and he is doing what he can to avert World War III, because really of Israeli interest in Iran. Medvedev is holding the line and is creating a alliance against the American-Israeli liberal New World Order. And over the last year or so, this has been the primary purpose of Medvedev's foreign policy. And I just can't see any way to intelligently challenge this. This has been Medvedev's plan, and now, particularly over the last few months, he has made this the explicit center of his plan and of his work. And I'm here to tell you what I've been saying for years. I was saying this during the Yeltsin administration, that Russia is at the center. Russia is at the center of this battle against the New World Order. And the New World Order, unfortunately, is being led by the United States government and its elite lodges and movements like the CFR and the Bilderbergs. And as of right now, it's this Russian-Arab-Iranian alliance which is seeking to overthrow this New World Order in favor of state sovereignty and human rights. And again, this is one more reason to be optimistic and to be happy. So I want to thank my listeners. I want to thank all of those who continue the struggle for nationalism, for the Christian faith, and for everything that we're all about here. I want to thank the Voice of Reason, Steve, and Mike, and Dietrich, and everybody else who's assisted me here, the American Free Press, as always, who has remained my friends, and I want to thank my listeners. Thank you, God bless, and goodbye.
Thanks for listening. The Orthodox Medievalist returns Thursday evening, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. Time. Join us at ReasonRadioNetwork.com.